are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, March 3rd, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. Here, broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It is Super Tuesday, folks. 14 states, 1,357 delegates at stake. On the program today, to give us a preview, I don't know if he's been to every one of those states this cycle, but he's been to many of them. Dave Weigel from the Washington Post will join us. Meanwhile, centrists congeal around Joe Biden. But what could possibly be their endgame? Chris Matthews retires from MSNBC.
Sad.
Apropos of endgame. The second coronavirus case found in New York, also two in Georgia. Meanwhile, the state of Florida and county of San Antonio issues public health emergencies. Doesn't sound as dire as that. Really just allows them to quarantine people. Meanwhile, coronavirus recalls the Sanders and Biden role in the demise of the reasonable pricing rule for pharmaceuticals. New York waives coronavirus testing in the state. I should say waives the fee for coronavirus testing. Fed cuts rates by a half a percentage point in response to coronavirus's shock on the economy. Trump successfully browbeat them. Supreme Court announces it's going to hear that Obamacare case out of Texas after the election. And Bibi Netanyahu, in an ominous word, wins in Israel. All this and more on today's program. It's true. I should have said COVID-19. Eesh.
C word.
Yes, exactly. We got to stay away from that word. We get demonetized when we say that word because we wouldn't want to have the premier platform to communicate to other people under the age of 50. We wouldn't want it to actually say the word of the name of the thing that is impacting the country. There you go, folks. Let's jump right in. As you know, I think some of you know, I am an MSNBC contributor. I am like, if they had a list of the hierarchy of contributors there, I would be not close to the bottom. I would be literally the bottom, I think.
You'd be the top of the Bernie supporters, though.
I'd be very close to the top of the supporting. In fact, yes, I probably would be in the top position of the Bernie supporters who are paid contributors there. That said, I've been working at the, I've been appearing on MSNBC for 15 years. And I don't know if I've ever done Chris Matthews show. I don't think I did. Maybe back in the day. I was booked many times. Not many times. But probably half a dozen over the years. And then they get into the meeting and they realize that there's a problem with me. And, you know, that's fine. Like, we do that around here occasionally.
What do you think it is with you?
Well, I mean, I've probably criticized him. I don't know. I don't think it's like an ideological thing. I don't know. You know, I really don't know.
Maybe
a lot of times
he just doesn't like your face.
It's, I mean, that comes up too. I mean, not necessarily my face, but faces. They're definitely, when I filled in for Olbermann, that was about 10 years ago now, I would raise a person and they would say, not right for television.
Damn.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, it's, you know, it's TV product, entertainment product. Chris Matthews over the years has gotten in hot water because he has said some really inappropriate things on air about women. He has said inappropriate things about people of color at times. He has put his foot in the mouth and he said some, I think, you know, completely nuts things about, like, he had an exchange with Warren recently that I thought was like nuts about Bloomberg. And of course, there was that one where he thought that, you know, Bernie Sanders might be hiding a secret agenda, that it goes beyond Denmark into Central Park, you know, killings and whatnot.
That one's my favorite.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And there's been more over the years. I mean, years and years of this. George Bush is, you know, a real cowboy machismo. I mean, he really, really enjoyed George Bush. Last night he opened his show by announcing that he was retiring from MSNBC anyways, and gave this, and I have to say, you know, a good way to go out. I thought this was pretty strong actually. And, you know, I think had he had this level of awareness over the past, you know, 5-10 years, that would have been, I think, a healthier thing. But let's play that now.
Let me start with my headline tonight. I'm retiring. This is the last
heart. Oh, bear with us 1 second. Sorry, we got to refresh that. Here we go.
I feel like I'm reading his mind.
Yeah, that was one of the things that he would rarely do. He had this one a unique ability as a broadcaster to actually speak without his lips moving at all. I don't know what. Here we go. Here we go.
Let me start with my headline tonight. I'm retiring. This is the last hardball on MSNBC. And obviously, this isn't for lack of interest in politics. As you can tell, I've loved every minute of my 20 years as host of Hardball. Every morning I read the papers and I'm gung-ho to get to work. Not many people have had this privilege. I love working with my producers and the discussions we have over how to report the news. And I love having this connection with you, the good people who watch. I've learned who you are, bumping into you on the sidewalk or waiting at an airport and saying hello. You're like me. I hear it from your kids and grandchildren who say, my dad loves you, or my grandmother loves you, or my husband watched it till the end. Well, after a conversation with MSNBC, I decided tonight will be my last hardball. So let me tell you why. The younger generations out there are ready to take the reins. We see them in politics, in the media, in fighting for their causes. They are improving the workplace. We're talking here about better standards than we grew up with, fair standards. A lot of it has to do with how we talk to each other. Compliments on a woman's appearance that some men, including me, might have once incorrectly thought were okay. We're never okay. Not then, and certainly not today. And for making such comments in the past, I'm sorry. I'm very proud of the work I've done here. Long before I went on television, I worked for years in politics, was a newspaper columnist, an author. I'm working on another book. I'll continue to write and talk about politics and cheer on my producers and crew here in Washington and New York and my MSNBC colleagues. They will continue to produce great journalism in the years ahead. And for those of you who have gotten in the habit of watching Hardball every night, I hope you're going to miss me because I'm going to miss you. But remembering Humphrey Bogart and Casablanca, we'll always have Hardball. So let's not say goodbye, but till we meet again.
I think that's about as strong of an exit as you can make. An awareness, he's acknowledging there an awareness that he, that there's a new generation, that he may be a little bit out of step with what is happening, within the Democratic Party. And also, a very straightforward acknowledgement that he has been inappropriate with women. And there was a piece, the most recent piece, I can't remember what publication, maybe it was in GQ. Laura Bassett, right? Who I think used to be at the Huffington Post. I can't quite remember. But she came out and spoke about her experience, not just on air, with Matthews, but apparently inappropriate comments sort of like in the moments before going on air. And my understanding is that there were, and she, I think, wrote this in the piece, other women who experienced this fairly consistently from Matthews. And, you know, he could have gone up there and said his goodbye without acknowledging that was a problem for him and without saying that, you know, he's leaving now. This isn't an apology so that he can stay. And
well, do you think he's being ushered out the door for that reason, though?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I do. I don't know if, you know, who pushed what or this or that, but I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back. I think there was other things. But I think that was the, you know, one of the, I think those two points were clearly the two big points. And, the idea that he A, acknowledged these things in the past, did not make an excuse for himself, simply said the reality, you know, that the standards have changed, that they were never fair to begin with. And, you know, kudos to him. I'm not saying he should stay. I'm saying, you know, I think that was the, and I hate the word classy, but that was a very sort of dignified way to go out, and a one that sort of, I think, expressed that he understood what was going on and why, you know, as opposed to some people who they get into that situation, it's really they feel sorry for themselves. And they make it about themselves in that regard. So,
yeah, I am going to miss a little bit watching him crap his pants over Bernie Sanders, though. I will say, like, it's so much more respectful to the other side than pretending to be neutral while subtly throwing shade. So I respected that about him.
Yeah, you always did get a sense of where he stood, but it was always also sort of rather odd in some places. But all right, so that's it for Chris Matthews. And I'm going to take some inspiration from that resignation and apology that we just saw from Chris Matthews on MSNBC. I am not resigning from this show. However, I do have an apology, and I'm going to make this apology not just for myself, but in some part for some of us here as well. Right. Because I think some people were a little bit more, are probably in need of making this apology, but I will do it on your behalf. Several days ago, it doesn't matter what day it was. We made a commitment to you, our audience, that we were going to cease showing videos of the decline of Joe Biden. And because we felt like at that point, people had already gotten the message. It wasn't going to be an issue. There was no reason to sort of like hammer this into the ground. At one point, it's gratuitous. But since we're back and Joe Biden is back in play, supposedly, we'll find out more tonight, but after South Carolina and the endorsements that were, and we'll talk more about this, apparently paved in some respect by Barack Obama.
Thanks, Obama.
Well, it's interesting, and we're going to talk about this later. It's interesting that Obama sort of orchestrated this, but still won't come out publicly. It leads me to believe that maybe necessarily Joe Biden isn't the answer. He may not be the ends. He may be the means.
Yeah, I mean,
but
Obama's smart.
We can talk about that in a bit, and I think probably we'll talk about it with Weigel a little bit. But point being is that I want to apologize in advance. We're going to play more videos of Joe Biden's decline because now it becomes relevant. And I will later in the program, I may do like a short little reiteration of when we talk about electability, you know, what you need to ignore about Joe Biden to think that he is going to do well against Donald Trump, or I should say win against Donald Trump. And I will concede this. And in fact, I think it's important to concede this. It's all a guess, right? It's an educated guess, maybe, but nobody knows. Anybody who tells you with some type of assuredness who's going to win this election, they're wrong. They don't know. They can't know. We saw a candidate win last time who had statistically maybe an 15 to 10% chance. So we don't know. But what we do know is this, is that people who follow Joe Biden, who have reported on Joe Biden over the years, say this guy has lost a step. People who were sitting on that stage debating him over the course of this campaign have said things like he's lost a step. Firsthand, I can tell you. And here's Joe Biden. And look, maybe Donald Trump will not exploit this. But here we go.
It's time for America to get back up on its feet and once again fight for the proposition that we hold these truths to be self-evident. Sounds corny. Not a joke. Think about it. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by you know the thing. You know how we talk about it. Are we the people, folks, endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights? We've never lived up to that. We've never lived up to that. Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the words, never lived up to it. But we've never, ever before walked away from it. Never.
So that silence you heard after it was pretty intense. I mean, it's look, this is the thing. You don't know which Joe Biden's going to show up. But I will tell you this. And we'll ask Weigel. He has the lightest campaign schedule of anybody. It's only going to get more intense if he has to run, against Donald Trump. And we'll see. But just play that one more time. Just isolate that clip if you can.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by you know the thing.
Yeah. Weird. And now, this I did appreciate. He almost sent all of his supporters to go vote on Super Thursday.
Look, tomorrow's Super Tuesday, and I want to thank you all.
Yeah.
Trump was referencing that in his campaign rally 3 hours later.
Oh, he was?
He called it Super Thursday. He's gone, folks.
Yeah. I mean, look, the... that I don't know if that's the most important thing about Joe Biden's problems from an electability standpoint, but it sure ain't going to help. It sure ain't going to help.
It wouldn't help him to govern as president either.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're in a second order thing, though. I think, honestly, people would vote for a can of beans if they thought it could win.
Figurehead.
And then figure out later what's going to happen. Hey, folks, are you a lover of true crime movies? Or those true crime shows? Are you a lover of, like, games of, like, strategy, like Mastermind? You remember the old Mastermind? Am I talking to, like, talk about school? Well, that's what I, okay, fine, whatever. Either way, you need Hunt to Killer. Hunt to Killer reinvents the way that we interact with murder mysteries. You go from being a viewer, safe in the comfort of your own home, to an investigator actively involved in solving the case. You can join the community of serial killer enthusiasts and detective minds to see if you have what it takes to hunt a killer. The Murder Mystery Subscription Box, with over 2,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, will forever change the way you do game night. I got to be honest with you, it started game night for me. Not that kind of family or person, frankly. But it got my daughter was psyched. She got into like Law and Order. And so I was like, "Hey, dude, would you do this with me?" She's like, "Yes." And it's been awesome. Each month we get a new package of basically, I don't know what you call it, evidence and evidence that moves the game along, helps you try and figure it out. Plus, part of the proceeds for every box go to the Cold Case Foundation. Mile and I have a bulletin board, and I got the red string, and we're working on this case, and we're trying to figure it out. I'm not going to give you any clues, just in case you're in the middle of it. But and basically, you go through what would be like the equivalent of like if you were watching a TV show, a season, and then you start again, like True Detective or whatever it is. And it's like watching these shows or the podcast. I mean, it's all over the place now. But instead of just watching it, you actually are participating in it.
Hopefully with fewer naked dead girls than True Detective.
Yes, I didn't. I mean, to be honest with you, I stopped watching after the first season. But it's completely, but my daughter and I love it. It's really the only time like she will interact with me. And it's it's sort of sad and funny. But I'm very, very grateful for it. And right now, for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/majority. Use the promo code MAJORITY at checkout for 20% off your first box. I mean, look, I want to be, my daughter's a high schooler. This is an adult game. But teenagers love it, too. It's been very great for us. Like I say, you go to huntakiller.com/majority, use the promo code majority at checkout, get 20% off your first box. Head to huntakiller.com/majority, 20% off your first box. Show support for this show and have some fun. Get back to gaming. Get off a screen. That's huntakiller.com/majority. All right, quick break. When we come back, Dave Weigel.
Thanks for all you've shown us. This is how we feel. Come sit next to me, pour yourself some tea. Just like grandma made when goodbyes me. Things were better then, once but never again. We've all left the den and the tight fight. The cheap train left right on time. A ticket costs only.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Ladies and gentlemen, I would bet that of all the people we could talk to who are not embedded in a campaign, this person probably has been to more of the states that are involved today and frankly across the country than anyone you personally know, ladies and gentlemen, unless they like work for like one of those things like where it's the driving hot dog and they go around and I don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. I think that stunt is done. Dave Weigel of The Washington Post, welcome back.
Thanks. And you call them campaigns, I call them covert operations.
Oh, there you go. That's right.
Dave Weigel,
the worst CIA agent around. all right. So, Dave, how many states have you been to in this cycle?
Oh, this – I don't want to break down everything because I'd forget a couple, but I've been to every state but Hawaii over the course of covering campaigns. I've probably been to about 20 this cycle.
Wow. Every state but Hawaii, like probably the most beautiful place you could go.
It's a bad one to do last, too, because if you do North Dakota last, you actually get like a gift bag because the statistics here in the state most people don't visit. And they're very happy if somebody makes them the 50th visit. But no, I've got Hawaii State. There's a primary there coming up, so I have a legitimate reason.
Sweet. Well, Matt's from North Dakota, and so he's constantly building that gift bag for people. That's they send about. All right. So We spoke to you on Friday about South Carolina. Just your quick take on, I mean, because it seems like it was a million years ago, and a lot has happened actually since then. But Biden seemed to overperform.
Yeah, he did. So I had a couple warnings about this, mostly on Twitter. I think that the Sanders campaign got a little bit high on its victories from earlier in the month, and I understand why. I mean, there's just this huge chorus in the media that downplays when Bernie Sanders does well. I get that, but some warning signs were there. I mean, he won the popular vote in the first three states, but he there was a huge walk away by some suburban voters who'd been pretty willing to vote for him in like a anyone but Hillary contest, and we're dicey now. We're flirting with their options. So he goes to South Carolina and has a whiter electorate than he did 4 years ago. He barely improves on his black vote. And Biden, from everything I was seeing and hearing from campaigns, Biden was always going to win, but surged by taking up support from all the moderates in the final couple days after Jim Clyburn's endorsement. So I don't think there was anything else the Sanders campaign could have done, but it was hoping for at least for a more narrow race that raised questions about whether Biden could put together Hillary's coalition. And look, every candidate's coalition is different, but the scale of that victory with black voters, I think, is got very ominous, and that's what saw the stampede toward Biden in the last 48 hours.
My take from the Clyburn thing, because it was like some huge percentage of voters took their of Biden voters took their cue from Clyburn, is that there's this real intense sense amongst voters that they just want the candidate who's going to beat Trump, and they don't necessarily. I mean, you know, I can guess. I was just saying that, you know, like I have an argument as to who that person is, but. You know, and I do this professionally, but I don't know either. And it's almost as if like a lot of the voters are saying, like, if I can outsource that decision, I will. And in some ways, they did that to Clyburn.
I think so. I mean, and if you're Sanders, the good thing is that there's not a Clyburn in every state. There really isn't. I mean, Clyburn is like an iconic figure in South Carolina. He has been there forever. He's the most powerful black politician in terms of party leadership in American history. And his word mattered. I think had he stayed neutral, I think Biden still wins, but I don't think you see the same race. And the Clyburn effect ends up ricocheting everywhere else because of that margin. I mean, the biggest external event. I mean, I think two hinge points in the past couple of weeks have been Klobuchar doing well enough to get one delegate in Iowa helped extend her campaign probably longer than it should have, which hurt Elizabeth Warren, which hurt Pete Buttigieg, then the Clyburn decision. And stuff ricochets past the other states. And I'm not trying to be negative about Sanders, but he has, I think, made the establishment of the party less and less worried in every state, even as he's done well in some of them, because they were looking for evidence that he was going to transform and pull in people that never would have voted for him otherwise. And you saw this in sort of Sanders' world on Twitter. I mean, not from the campaign itself, mostly from supporters arguing, look, if he is in a position where he's rocketing towards a nomination, the opposition is going to fall to the side because people want to unite and beat Trump. That had not been happening. There's not been an event that has really boosted Sanders in the same way. Even Nevada was by far his most impressive win, bigger than the polls suggested, and he added to his coalition. But he added in a way that that Biden was able to overwhelm in a more African-American state. So the disadvantage for Biden is that there's only a few states comparable. Even if you look at the rest of Super Tuesday map, the only state that looks demographically like South Carolina is Alabama,
right?
Where you're going to have probably, again, a majority of voters will be African-American. But the Sanders weakness with those white rural conservatives who backed him last time, that's kind of what I'm watching today. And I think that is why you've got a little more spring in the step from the party establishment saying, oh, we don't need to settle for Sanders. Great.
Yeah. There was the turnout was significantly larger in South Carolina. And a lot of those people were white, affluent voters. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's been one element of reality that some of the left have not gotten to yet. Now, look, if you look at the Working Families Party and some people who endorsed Warren, part of their argument all along was she can win some of she's a bit more like those people who won in 2018, the suburban women. She can appeal to them. That was kind of the pitch for Kamala Harris. It was a pitch for a lot of you know people who got left on the wayside on the way to this election. And there is, I think, a starting assumption with a lot of Sanders analysis that if you turn out more people, you're turning out people who don't normally vote. People who don't normally vote are don't because they don't think the government's providing providing real services or doing what it says. So they're Sanders voters. That's the assumption. In South Carolina, I mean, the most of the turnout surge went to other candidates. It went to Joe Biden. He did much better than – I mean, he shrank – he was below Hillary's margin, I should say, in the state. So, like, Hillary's landslide there. Indeed, they prevented them from – they prevented Biden from breaking the way the same way that Biden did – that Hillary did.
Right.
But, I mean, she got 272,000 votes, and Biden got about 260,000 votes, and Sanders ticked up a little but I'm doing my math now. Yeah, she took it by about 10,000. But then you look at everybody else, and there were just between Steyer and Buttigieg and Warren, that was this giant pile of about 150,000 votes that came in, and those people who didn't vote in the last primary, they got more. And the key district here, and funny enough, the first district of South Carolina is the one that includes Charleston, the one that's been moving the quickest towards Democrats. It's got all these retirees and people with college degrees in it. And the congressman there stayed neutral. He ended up personally voting for Buttigieg, but only saying so afterward. But the biggest turnout jump was in that district. I mean, tens of thousands of voters who skipped the last primary, and Sanders did not do very well in that district.
Yeah. So what does that tell us? Well, OK, so let's move forward. Yeah. So Biden comes out of there with a big enough win that the Project Biden is revived, essentially. Barack Obama, it was reported by The Times, called Pete Buttigieg the other night and supposedly did not say you should endorse Biden, but said, now is the time of your maximum leverage. Who knows what was said in that conversation, but I think it's quite clear that Obama, I don't know if he orchestrated this behind the scenes, but he certainly sort of like, pulled the right, pressed the right buttons and pulled the right levers in to sort of get to the point where you have Klobuchar, Buttigieg. I mean, I think people were very surprised about Klobuchar and, dropping out when she did.
Right.
Because nobody anticipated, she wasn't like she was going in like, I'm going to revive my campaign in South Carolina. She was waiting for Minnesota. The project's been revived. First off, let me ask you this. Like, what's going on there with that? I mean, because why wouldn't... What's the theory behind Obama not endorsing Joe Biden, but like how much is this is about Joe Biden and how much of it is how much is Joe Biden the ends or the means in this situation, right?
Well, one victory for Sanders was I think the there was one theory of how to win a nomination and I guess protect the establishment, and that was the Hillary one, which is lock up as much support as early on as you possibly can. And there was a backlash to that. I mean, Hillary was better at lining up support than almost anybody. I mean, the only comparison is Al Gore, and the comparison only falls apart because Bill Clinton endorsed Al Gore before Iowa. So he said he put the hand on. And Sanders, I think, effectively scared a lot of Democrats out of putting the hand on. They also were scared because of their options. And look, why didn't Joe Biden get the same support from donors as Hillary Clinton, despite 8 years in the White House? One reason is what you saw with the support for Buttigieg and these other candidates, is that a lot of Democrats who saw Biden close up and saw their options said, I'm not sure if this is the guy who can go long distance against Donald Trump, and maybe we need to try something else. So I think that there are a lot of factors going into this. Obama's just taken this hands-off position of not making an early statement, an early endorsement that is – somewhat unique for a president, but I think part of it is that if he had jumped in at any other point and said, I'm putting my hands on, they've got to mollify the Sanders movement, which if he loses this nomination, there'll be a lot of people saying, that's it, I'm done. I'm not going to vote anymore. So I think the caution made a lot of sense. But knowing what Obama's thought of this primary, he has liked Pete Buttigieg for a very long time. He's among the kind of Frank Bruni column readers who think this guy's the future of the party. I'm not trying to be dismissive. I'm just saying that's a right. demographic, right? Like Joe Biden loves David Brooks, and I think Obama liked him and Frank Bruni, so he always liked the guy. And he had I think well reported concerns about Biden as a candidate. I don't think those concerns vanished. I mean, one advantage that I'll eat crow. One thing I thought was that this South Carolina was coming too close to Super Tuesday to help Biden tremendously. And the way that it has is that, like, any time you're spending talking about endorsements momentum, you're not spending talking about Biden still kind of making stumbles on the trail, right?
Yes.
I mean, he got as good of a pass on the weird Nelson Mandela story. I mean, a debate went without him asking.
Well, let's be clear here.
Some goofy things that Trump will exploit, but you just saw people who didn't want to interfere in the primary say, okay, well, we've got a sign now. We can signal that this should be between two candidates and move on.
I mean, do you think that's I guess what I'm asking here, and I agree with all what you just said. I mean, the guy lied about being arrested in South Africa, seeing Nelson Mandela. That is, you know, in any other sort of like period, that would be disqualifying, right? I mean, it was his first two times or his first time running when he told a story like that, essentially, or plagiarized. Mm-hmm. But what is the end game here? In other words, like, is there a sense that he, I mean, it feels like to me that this is an all in on a brokered convention, not necessarily a Joe Biden victory.
Yeah, well, not necessarily. So with Buttigieg and Klobuchar out, and with Bloomberg as the only other threat in the moderate lane, if you want to agree or disagree with the moderate, with the lane idea.
Right.
So here's the hope, I'd say, if you got inside Democratic establishment headquarters on their floating asteroid. They look at next week and say, what if Bloomberg is out? What if it is Biden and Sanders and Warren and Gabbard just kind of doing her thing? What if then we go to states like Michigan and Illinois and Florida, giant states, and in the case of Michigan, one that Bernie won very closely, and we're the only game in town for the electability voter? What if we get to do this, most of this, before there's another debate, which they will? So I think there is a sense, not that you can knock Bernie out with a couple of good results, but let's imagine that Biden wins Michigan by any margin after the Michigan's really iconic in the Bernie story, right? That he won it when other people couldn't. I think there is a sense that if you prove that Biden has vigor, there are Democrats who like him. And look, another thing he's benefited from is Biden has been not sinking in head-to-head polls against Trump. I mean, they're pretty fluid. He generally does about as well as Bernie, maybe a little bit worse. But his favorables have dipped very heavily during this whole campaign, much like Hillary Clinton's did. It's not just not getting much of the coverage. So I think the next week for opponents of Sanders would be about, let's create a sense of momentum and embarrass Bernie in a couple of states. So it looks like this guy is just not putting together the votes he needs to win the nomination. And if that's the case, he's running a 2016 campaign, but worse because, and I should clarify, I'm always like saying what I think people would think, because there's not a decades-old anti-Biden movement the way there is for Hillary.
Right.
There's not a lot of angry white guys in Appalachia who hate Joe Biden. They did hate Hillary, and the Sanders campaign does not have the caucuses that really helped keep him in the hunt last time. Today, for example, I mean, there's four states. There's Colorado, Minnesota, Utah and Maine, which had caucuses, which Sanders won by landslide. In Utah, like a 80% landslide. He will, I think, win all those states today, probably. Bad news for him if he does not win any of them. If there's one that he doesn't win, I think that would point to trouble down the line. But with those, I mean, looking down the map, for all the focus on California, you've got the rest of March, there's an opportunity to beat Sanders in some Midwestern states, and there's not the same sort of heavy – delegate caucus states down the mat. Washington State, for example, also votes on the 10th. It's a mail-in ballot, but it's in 2016. This is complicated. I'm going to run through quickly. For some reason, Washington had both a caucus and a primary, and Hillary did very well in the primary, but she got smoked in the caucus. So there's a sense here that you start putting up decent numbers against Sanders or beating him in states he won last time, and there's not another place for him to recover to. I think he would end up recovering to Arizona and Wisconsin and places that demographically are pretty good for him and also where he has campaign strength. But it would be – it's very ironic. He would be running against somebody in Biden with far less support from donors and far less, I think, buy-in from activists, less of an organization than Hillary had, yet without Hillary's problems that kept dragging her down. And the final point I'll make on this is there was a voter in 2016 – who just was never going to expect to see Sanders in the White House, but wanted to vote for him to keep the primary going, to keep the debate going, because they thought, well, I don't want a coronation for Hillary. I want to move in the Sanders direction at least. And that voter now, I think, has been replaced by one who's terrified of Trump and just wants him to go away. And that voter, I think, is the one being reached out to here if it looks like Biden can be said to have momentum. Like, he wins in North Carolina, he wins in Virginia. They'll say, look, I mean, this guy went from dead to in a position to win. I think there'd be polls that come out in the next week, especially because of the coronavirus, that have him beating Trump pretty handily. There'll be some good old-fashioned consent manufacturing going on to say this guy is still – you counted him out and he's in it. I mean, that's one of the great narratives of politics, isn't it? Everyone wrote him off, but here he is. And I think Sanders benefited from that in Iowa. I think Biden would benefit from that if they had a good Tuesday.
So what do you so let's look for a moment at Warren and Bloomberg. What is your sense of what they need to stay in the race or what their intentions are? I mean, mm-hmm. to the extent that you have any sense of that.
I think both of them need external events to really make them competitive. So both Warren and Bloomberg are talking openly about this moving to a convention where no one has a majority of delegates. In that situation, I think Warren is probably in a better position just because they're both former Republicans, but she actually got in this race before 10 minutes ago. She did not endorse George W. Bush. You don't need to go down the whole list.
Right.
And he's thrown a lot of money at state parties, but she's made a lot of personal connections, more than Bloomberg has, despite all the spending. And so their thinking is, if it gets to a situation where there's a convention and it looks like Sanders can't win the general and Biden has been weakened terribly, then they're in the hunt. That is a theory. I mean, I think the original Warren plan and the original Bloomberg plan are basically gone. Warren's plan was to win Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada and lose South Carolina but win on Super Tuesday. That's gone. The Bloomberg plan was that Biden would be so weak that he would probably come in second behind Sanders on Super Tuesday. TBD. We've got like 7 hours, or if you're in California, we've got 11 hours left. But that looks less likely today. So they're kind of counting on a broker convention. And again, I think there's just that raises so many hackles with Democrats that if Biden looks strong, you will hear more pressure for them to get out. And I frankly hear the pressure on Warren. I don't know what would happen per se. But if she has the kind of day where she's comfortably, she made her point, she's comfortably in third place. Maybe if she wins Miss Massachusetts, she's kind of a jump ball. I think there's a way for her to get out of the race. I think there's a clear way for Bloomberg to get out because he got into this to stop Bernie Sanders.
Right.
If it looks like Biden's going to stop him, this is not a thing he will admit right now. But that is the one candidate who I think would take a hard look at it and say, okay, this guy can still pull it off. Again, we're going past all the concerns about his ability to campaign. His crowds are pretty small. He still makes some stuff up. A lot of that would be thrown under the rug just saying, let's get behind this horse right now.
So I guess what I'm asking is, let's say, what if Warren – I mean, if Warren loses Massachusetts, how does she stay in the race, or does she have to just to make it seem like that was the plan all along? I mean, I
don't think she does. I don't think she can. I think it's kind of fanciful. I mean, I think the Sanders trying to play for a knockout there was pretty smart. I mean, you even saw people. One of the ironies here is that if you lose an election, you get to be an MSNBC pundit and shape opinion. And you've seen, you know, Claire McCaskill and Heidi Heitkamp and these Democrats couldn't win in 2018 saying, well, Warren's margins weren't very impressive when, you know, she won by 20-some points. So they're trying to argue, look, they're very desirous that there's just not going to be much support for Warren in her hometown. And there's a desire by many factions for her to lose and get out of this. I would point out most of Massachusetts's state legislators who have endorsed Biden, not her. The congressional delegation has mostly endorsed her, with the exception of Seth Moulton, who endorsed Biden after running for president on generational change. But let's leave that aside.
Right.
I don't think she has a path at all if she does not win it. I don't think she has much of a path if she does win it. I just think winning Massachusetts after all this would give her a more dignified exit. But the campaign's stated position is look at the mess that's going to be at the top. And one thing they're not wrong about is there has been frustration by a lot of Democratic women that after everything that they've done after 2016, after the surge in 2018, that they'd be forced to choose between two white guys who'll turn 80 when they're president.
Right.
There's real frustration about that. And one thing that really hurt Warren, I think, is that Klobuchar did well enough in New Hampshire to stay in. A lot of support stayed on the sidelines because they were wringing their hands. They didn't want to get into a race if there were two choices, two strong women choices. Emily's List, for example, is the kind of group that would have endorsed Warren at the start of the month, last month, had she won Iowa or had Klobuchar dropped out. And they only endorsed her yesterday when Klobuchar dropped out. So I do think there is a vote out there that is – but it is limited because, you know, like I was saying before, there was a voter last cycle who said, Hillary's going to win. I'm going to play around and
right.
See where this goes. And that voter this time is saying, I want to see a woman president. I'm scared. I don't care. Let's maybe Biden can make a woman VP. Maybe Sanders can. But let's get this over with.
Who benefits if Warren drops out?
There's polling on this, but it's very buyer beware because it changes a lot. Her top second choice has for voters, for, I should say, top second choice has been Bernie Sanders pretty consistently. But that does not mean they all go to Bernie Sanders. And I think her current coalition, based on where it's been coming from places, there are some people who the loud ones on Twitter whose second choice is clearly Bernie Sanders, but she gets a lot of suburban female voters who I think do not like Bernie, do not want him to be the nominee, would reluctantly vote for Biden. Or, you know, one option is that they just don't vote in the primary.
Right.
So I think her dropping out would help Bernie in some ways. And in terms of the delegate math and state to state, it would help him. But not all her voters would move to Sanders. And I feel, I mean, there sure people will point to polling from a couple of weeks ago just so that, well, Sanders will beat anyone head to head. We don't know yet. We don't know how that looks if Biden seems like he's back on the path to win something after tomorrow. We really don't. We really do not know. I mean, it's not good radio, but like anyone making predictions based on polls from the day before is in bad shape. Polls were dramatically off in a bunch of these states.
Yeah, I have to say, I was out canvassing in Massachusetts this weekend, and I was pretty struck by the absence of Warren voters. I mean, it was also a working class neighborhood, but I was really struck by just sort of the first thing out of people's mouths was like, "I want to get that piece of garbage out of the White House," and everything else was sort of secondary to them. And you know, I think most people are just looking for some, you know, they would outsource that determination as to who's going to win, if they could, frankly.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, that's why we have you on to tell us who's going to win. And yeah, look at you, you won't even do it.
I could be part of some cool supercut after the election about a bunch of schmucks who are wrong, but that sounds cool. But no, I hate making predictions, not because I hate being wrong, but because I think like that's a thing people dislike about the press, that we sit somewhere. I can tell you what I've seen on the ground, but I can't tell you, when X happens, Y will happen. I just like before South Carolina, people are confidently telling you, oh, I knew that after South Carolina, most of the moderates would drop into North Biden. Like, no, they didn't. We didn't know that.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, do you think that there's, and I was sort of trying to get at this, and maybe, and it doesn't sound like you've heard anything to this effect, but it does occur to me that, that maybe the idea is that, like, if this ends up being a, I don't know, 35-30% race by the time it gets to the convention between Biden and Sanders, then it seems to me like the only time where it makes sense to, like, bring in somebody who didn't do very well as a third choice. Do you know what I mean? Like, when there's that level of parity, let me rephrase that. That when there's that level of parity, that it seems to me that it is the most fertile scenario in which one could imagine that might give a third party, a third candidate, a sense that maybe there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, is that you need some people to fail. Like, you need, let's imagine a situation where Biden does very well tomorrow, but then he makes a ton of mistakes, and he does do poorly on the 10th. He does poorly on the 17th. Bloomberg doesn't get out. I think you need that to happen for there to be a conversation about, like, well, we try and we can't make a decision. There's been a lot of, because California is on the map today, there's a lot of talk about, oh, well, what would happen if people try to catch Sanders, because they can't. And I think it's worth pouring some cold water on that, because of the five states that cast the most votes in Democratic primaries, only one of them is voting today, California. You then go to New York, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and Florida. They're all coming up fairly soon. New York's in April. And Florida could have extremely high turnout. So the idea that again, Democrats are pretty accepting of a couple days ago that no one could catch Bernie in the popular vote count and the delegate vote count, I think would fade away. And look, let's just be honest about it. That conversation was largely among moderate Democrats worried that Sanders would get like 38% of delegates and claim the nomination. If it's a situation where Biden has 38% of the delegates, everyone who is whining about this will be like, oh, that's fine.
Right.
And they will,
right.
You know, I think,
of course,
with no small degree of cynicism, look at Bernie's quotes from that week and say, well, even Bernie said that whoever had the biggest plurality should be the nominee. So I guess we're done here.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's just go over the states and just give me your sense. I know you don't want to make a prediction, but California, I think people are anticipating a big Bernie win. Now, that's not going to come in tonight, right? Like, we're going to be hearing about this for the next 2 weeks or something like that, right?
Yeah, and it'll be – so the California vote situation is interesting in a lot of ways because there's a lot, precincts have been replaced by these early vote sites that so far I've not seen are having a ton of problems, but it's very early in the day there. And what happened in – I know what happened in 2016. I can describe that. So Hillary Clinton blew Sanders away in the first count of people who voted on Election Day, and there were more than 1.3 million ballots counted afterward, actually closer to 1.6. When those ballots were counted, Sanders did slightly better and better, and he ended up losing by single digits when it looked like he was going to win, lose by 10 or 12. So now the caveat here is that the early vote – so it's about 1.4 million early votes were cast by Democrats in the run-up to today. If there'll be people who vote just today, and that's not counted for like 3 weeks, for 4 weeks. That might have been a vote where – that almost certainly was a vote where Joe Biden did worse than he does today, given what happened. That might be a vote where Sanders was doing better than he does on Election Day. We don't know. And the one thing I am confident is that I can see a situation where Biden does worse as the vote is counted than he did today.
Right.
And the really fun thing here – and so – you look at the AP and all that stuff. I think their delegate projections, they're just not going to make them for a while because they're hard to make in California. They're gonna shift. The really fun one, and I use the word fun sort of sarcastically, to imagine is let's say there's a situation where three based on the polling, Sanders and Biden and Warren and Bloomberg all qualify for some delegates statewide, and then as more votes are come in from late deciders, Bloomberg falls out of that. So he goes to bed thinking he got 50 statewide delegates and he ends up getting none. Or somebody thinks they got none and then as the count comes in, they got more. That could be Biden. So,
why don't they why don't they count these votes when they come in?
It's a really good question.
Thank you.
This every cycle. They're incredibly slow about doing this. And it's even less excusable in a case like this where unless you live in a couple of these congressional districts with contested primaries, you're just showing up and voting for president, basically.
Yeah. Why can't you just like count them as they come in? Like set up your system so that they count them as they come in. But I don't know. I mean, that's because I think this is going to have I would imagine Biden's going to do better today than he did with all the votes that were already cast. I mean, I think that, you know, that dynamic, I think, seems at least fairly straightforward. We don't know what the degree, but I would imagine. All right, Texas, do they have early voting? Are we going to have the same situation there? Or
they have
is it
a
just,
ton.
They have a ton.
They will probably not have anything decisive until tomorrow. They had more than 1 million early Democratic votes cast, which is huge for California.
For Texas.
Sorry, huge. Too many of these states. we need fewer states. It's huge for Texas. So last time it cast around 1.6 million total in the primary. This time they're at 1 million already.
Wow.
So you could see, I think doubling would be a tall order, but you probably see at least increase by 50% total turnout in Texas. But they don't have the same exact counting problem. They have other counting problems. I mean, there's parts stretch of the state that are extremely rural. And so they might not reveal everything till tomorrow, but they'll probably be able to say, oh, here's who is ahead tonight. The other thing is that Texas is – this is all super so annoying. Most states assign delegates statewide and then by congressional district, and Texas does it statewide and by state Senate district. And there are huge variances. There are state Senate districts that have two delegates. There's districts that have 10. Mm. So the delegate count there is going to be – like one advantage for Biden that I keep an eye on, and this stuff does matter even though it probably shouldn't, is that – so look at the night. The night begins with actually American Samoa finishing up at 6 o'clock Eastern time.
Right.
So mark that off. Then Vermont and Virginia close. Sanders will win Vermont, but keep in mind he won it by such a landslide last time that Hillary got no delegates. Possible it happens again, but, you know, the same kind of negative voices in the media will say, oh, well, hey, Sanders only got 70%. What's that mean for him? Virginia closes, and every indication is that Biden went from kind of in the back of the pack to winning Virginia decisively. 7:30, North Carolina closes. That is a state where, again, Biden was organized pretty well, but for an early state, and then came in really strong after South Carolina. Then you've got at 8, Massachusetts, another run of states. You've got some southern states. So what I'm getting to is that by 10 p.m.
That Biden has a disproportionate number of delegates that he will win early in the night. And so the narrative by the time we get to tomorrow morning is going to be Biden's cleaning up and then possibly – a week or two later, we're going to realize that Sanders won big.
Yeah.
Possible scenario.
Yeah, so that there's a scenario here where what I was getting to is, remember the 2018 midterms where there's a lot of quick analysis. The funniest one is Brett Stevens, who writes a whole column based analysis and has to revise it like 6 times because they keep adding Democratic congressional gains. But, you know, TV people have to talk, and they say, oh, it looks like the first races we're paying attention to, Democrats didn't do that great, so it's all over, and they didn't wait till the West Coast. So you have something similar where it looks like Biden did very well, and why does this matter? Well, remember the calendar I'm talking about. While this is happening, people in Washington and Michigan who can early vote will say, oh, it looks like Biden did really well, and that'll move some votes. In Florida and Arizona, which have already early voting underway, people might look at it and say, oh, looks like Biden's it. So I think it's very bad for Bloomberg more than anybody, bad for Warren, generally good for Biden, that the states where he's going to do very – that we think he will do very well are first. Now, all that reverses if Sanders does very well. I'm familiar with Virginia, and the indications here is that just – The lanyard vote and like the voters in other parts of the state are going to go for him. And the other thing I'm watching in Virginia very closely is the districts on basically the Appalachian Shenandoah districts. That's where Bernie did best last time. And I am fascinated by the person who voted for Bernie because they hate Hillary and have no other connection to him. In South Carolina, the one I go to is Pickens County, which is up kind of where Clemson is, basically. Bernie got 45% of that vote against Hillary, and he only got 27% this time. I want to look at those rural parts of Virginia, too, because that'll be a sign as the race keeps moving to places with lots of working-class white guys, whether or not Bernie is converting people or whether they turned out to just, be kind of a dark commentary in the last few years, whether they really were just voting for Bernie because they wanted to vote against Hillary. And I don't know. They organize very heavily in these states, but there's a bunch of tests coming up.
All right. Lastly, let me ask one question. I know I've held you too long, and I appreciate you staying with me. One thing that I have not heard anything about is, right, like there was a real sense that Sanders had organized extremely well with Latinos in Nevada, right?
Yeah.
And this is going to be a big part of the story in California. I mean, we're already talking a million early votes in Texas. It's conceivable we're going to get like sort of this massive turnout there. And we don't know. Maybe it's just like, I don't know, people in the suburbs from Houston, you know, really getting involved in this because they really want, Biden or whatever it is. I have no way of knowing, but I wonder, like, to what extent do we really know at this point, like how many, because the whole thing is that Bernie has not delivered on these voters necessarily that don't participate. But do we really know that? I mean, do we have enough granular data? And I'm asking this, I don't mean this to be leading, like, do we have enough granular data? Because it seems to me that, you know, that there is this cohort of voters out there, like I say, mm-hmm. who I just don't know who to vote for. They just want somebody who's going to beat Trump.
Yeah.
And it's quite possible that some of those are just saying, like, I'm going to stay at home. Like, I'm a high propensity Democratic voter, and I know I'm going to vote for the Democrat. And I don't care who it is. You could put, you know, like, it could be Mike Bloomberg. It could be Biden. It could be Bernie. It could be. And so I'm just going to punt and just say, like, And the people who are coming out are actually the people who are like heavily motivated for a specific candidate, which would be sort of the flip of what we generally, you know, assume voting patterns are. Do we have any sense of whether that, you know, is a half-baked theory or whether there's any evidence to that at all or no?
Well, you're right that we need more data. It so far has not really happened. And if you point this out, Sanders people will get really churlish, and I understand why, because it's like, why are you talking down these victories he won? But he has not transformed the electorate, and he has not even won everyone who's a new voter. I mean, there's sort of a desire for those people to be Bernie people, to be voters who he turned out after nobody else could. And they're not so far. So I was mentioning Pickens County in South Carolina. We just need more evidence, and we're going to get a ton from places like Tennessee, from Virginia, from Oklahoma. Oklahoma is actually one to watch because last time Sanders won that on the strength of independent voters. Now, he generally does. He is an independent. He does well with independent voters, I think. It's been one of the general election arguments for him is that, look, there's a lot of people. This whole argument about him not being really a Democrat, they do not care. That's awesome.
Right.
But he actually lost registered Democrats in Oklahoma, and he won big with independents, so he won the state by 10 points. Well, that's a state where I'm kind of watching places like Little Dixie, like Muskogee, all these areas where Sanders just like ran the table last time. I'm curious to see now, did his canvassers find people who were working class Democrats who'd given up and have decided that they're coming back because he's given them a real offer, or were they just anti-Hillary? And we will like learn a lot more in about 8 hours.
I guess we'll also find out about Latino voters in Texas and California, and I guess maybe Virginia we would see, and North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dave Weigel, thanks so much for your time today. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Weigel, and you can sign up for his it's called The Trailer. It's an email blast, and it's an email blast that you can pick up on, it's an email. It's an email. What am I? It's a newsletter, right? email newsletter. I got distracted. Blast. What are you putting up here?
So the Working Families Party is saying that Warren is a progressive and will ensure we have a progressive nominee. Ryan Grimm's decoding of that is, if Warren gets a delegate tonight, she has reason to stay in. And WFP is saying here she will not side with Biden or the establishment at the convention. If she doesn't get delegates, there's no reason to persist.
Yeah, you know, like this.
Nice choice of words.
This idea that honestly, that there is like I think there's certainly made the critiques about her campaign. I think that they, you know, and you know, it's hard to know what the inner workings of the campaign are and why the certain decisions have been made at different times. But I think it's quite clear. Like there is no rationale for her to be conspiring with Joe Biden. And like
I mean, I was talking to my mom about it last night when I said, oh, she's just running to be Biden's VP now. And my mom's like, well, maybe she thinks she could have some influence there.
I mean, that's quite possible. You know, I mean, that's not an irrational thing, but I think it's also just sort of like I think that from her perspective, there's also a lot of influence she could have in the Senate. And that it's hard to imagine that a guy from her perspective, that a guy like Joe Biden is going to let her do the things that she would want to do in that instance.
Oh, I agree.
And so I don't know. There's as far as I can tell, there's very little basis of that sort of speculation.
Did a hell of a job of your job.
And I think, you know, yesterday Warren came out and, you know, criticized Biden. Probably to make sure that people were aware that, you know, she's willing to do that. But, you know, she's running in the same lane, at least, you know, from their perspective as Sanders. And she's running. She wants to win. She's running a campaign. That's the thing, is that like there's, you know, you got Donald Trump out there. The more proof that it's rigged against Bernie. I want to make something clear. It's not rigged when politicians decide that endorsing another politician is in their best interests for their political careers. It's not rigged when, you know, a former president steps in and brokers it. That's what politics is. That's not rigging. It's
rigged in a larger sense that the system is set up in such a way to discourage progressive candidates.
There is no system that doesn't allow for those type of machinations. You can put them in a Politburo. You can put it in like a completely no money in campaigns. There's no system where politicians don't do what they think is in their best interest and leverage certain moments. That happens all the time. That is politics. I mean, shit, that like you can find that same dynamic in the YouTube commentator world, for God's sakes, right? Like, I've got to support this person here in this fight so that I can maintain my constituency there and get, you know, like, I mean, that stuff, that's not rigging.
I have no
the word rigging means nothing if that's what a rig is.
I have no weddedness to the word rigging. I do think corporate establishment is one word term that I think should be applied to these
people. Of course, they're a faction in our politics that of course are going to look out for each other. You know, like it's no more rigging that, you know, what they're doing than like Bernie endorsed, you know, a progressive in this district. I mean, that's not rigging. That's like, that's what politics are.
Yeah, short of a system that abolishes having a political class of people who do this professionally. Yes, I agree.
Yes, and I will cop to that is my basic assumption, that we're going to have a political class. They're going to run for stuff. They're going to operate in a way that's think they're own. Yes. It is completely founded on the premise that the options are between, you know, the candidates that are in the race. And then I guess theoretically, you know, like, Obama, you know, Oprah comes in at the convention and says, I'll be president. those are the options on the table, not anarchy or self-governance by everybody.
Workers' and there's councils.
No workers' councils. That's correct.
I'm sure there's some funny business that could go on with workers' councils.
I suspect
well, but,
that, yes, indeed.
We're going to try our best next
right.
time.
I mean, it might be, you know, sort of like the stakes might be a little bit smaller, but not necessarily for the people working there. But yes, even on the workers' council, I think you're going to like, you know what? I think Betty's going to do the best job. I'm going to support her. Really? Are you rigging it?
I think
because Mario wants to win too.
I'm not going to the ballot box until there's a candidate that can promise to end political conflict forever.
There you go. There you go.
Atomic bombs, I think.
Exactly.
It is disturbing to watch them consolidate power so quickly, though.
I mean, look, I'm surprised. You know, and I think there's a real fear of Sanders. And I think a lot of it is, you know, I think in some quarters it's ideological. In others, it's like, I'm going to be out of a job. Like, you know, Pete Buttigieg's career is going to go a lot better under a Biden administration than it would under a Sanders administration.
He's just going to be a third way spokesperson if Sanders wins.
Exactly.
He'll be fine. Also, I want to apologize for letting my baby boy Beto escape from the basement to endorse Joe Biden. I promise it will not happen again.
I'll have more on them later.
That is so on you. Like, you had a lot of time to prep for this.
Coddled that boy.
I know.
You really did.
I got soft.
You really did.
Biko with Marianne, too. Oh, no, actually, Marianne delivered, so I guess that worked out.
Yep, there you go. I don't know. Is she moving any votes? I don't know.
See, in Texas. She endorsed him in Texas. I think if Bernie wins in Texas, I'm going to attribute it to Marianne Williamson.
All right, folks. Just a reminder, this program relies on your support. Oh, I should just tell you what the rest of the day is looking like. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to reconvene here at about 7:30 tonight. Well, we're going to do a fun half, and then we're going to reconvene here at about 7:30 p.m. tonight. At that point, we will have places like Virginia closes at 7 p.m. Massachusetts, I think, closes around then. Massachusetts closes at 8. Good for them. North Carolina is at 7:30. And then we're going to vamp for a while. There'll be some at 8 p.m. is Massachusetts. We got Virginia. We got... Tennessee at 8 p.m. We got Alabama at 8 p.m. We got Oklahoma at 8 p.m. We got Maine at 8 p.m. We got Vermont at 7 p.m. And then we're going to get some more in around like 9 or 10. Texas and California, we're going to leave it. It's going to be a cliffhanger because I think we'll probably go to about 11:30 tonight, 12. And then I'm probably going to head over to MSNBC for 1 in the morning. And I would imagine we're going to have at that point virtually no more information. But that's what the plan is. Alex Perrine will be joining us tonight in studio. Brandon Sutton will be joining us in studio. Everybody here, Jamie, Matt, Brendan will be here. I think we're going to go get a whiteboard so we can update as things go along. That's going to be super exciting. Our first time we're doing with a whiteboard. And we're going to have like our own Steve Kornacki, and we'll probably be just taking it from Steve Kornacki, to be honest with you. But also CNN. And,
it's called Cribbin' Kornacki.
Cribbin' Kornacki. That's what we're going to call that corner. And so it should be fun. We'll be drinking. I will. I guess I can't drink too much if I'm going to go do MSNBC, or maybe I do.
I think it's fine over there.
Yeah, that's all right. It's a new age, a new era over there. So that's what's happening for the rest of the day. Folks, your membership supports this program. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, we give you the free show, free of ads, and then you get extra content every day. Also, check out the AM Quickie at amquickie.com, or you can get it on our app, majorityapp.com. The app is free. You can get the free show. You can sign up as a member. You can log on as a member. You can watch our videos. We're posting videos into members' feeds more. Those will get out in the next couple of days. just we've got to work out a workflow for that. So check out AM Quickie. And don't forget, the Noma Key Show is doing a live show in L.A. that's going to be streamed on their program. And they're going to start around 10:30 Eastern time. So watch us, then watch Noma Key show. You can check that out. You can also check out our show over at patreon.com/the Noma Key Show. Folks, remember, whether you're a diehard crime junkie or you're just looking for a way to make game night more exciting, in my case, actually have a conversation with your teenager. Hunt a Killer will get your adrenaline pumping as you examine clues and solve puzzles, all leading you towards solving a murder. Go to huntakiller.com/majority. Use the promo code majority at checkout for 20% off your first box. They send you a series of box with more evidence. That's huntakiller.com/majority with promo code majority. TMBS tonight apparently is going to be streaming the Noma Key show from L.A. So you can catch it on either channel, I guess. I don't know what difference that makes.
I don't have anything to do with that. So.
All right. Well, that was a mistake, apparently.
I hope they're not relying on me to coordinate that.
Jamie, what's new with the Antifada?
So this week on the Antifada, we had on Shuja Hader, who is a great writer for The Outline, Viewpoint Mag, and other places, to talk about this unique moment that we're in with the Bernie Sanders movement and how it relates to the larger fight for socialism. So we talked about that for most of the time. We talked about Bernie and intersectionality. We talked about what socialism even is, because it's always been, excuse me, contested territory. So that's coming out tomorrow, patreon.com/theantifada.
Matt!
Coming up in the next few weeks on Literary Hangover, we're going to be talking about Toni Morrison's book, A Mercy, and which goes in with the recent topics we've done on sort of Virginia colonization and race, gender, and class, which is a lot of things in there. Bacon's Rebellion stuff. So check that out. Look forward to that, folks.
Right now, apparently, 538 is saying that, the race is flipped now in terms of like the chances of Biden winning a plurality.
Don't listen to them.
Well,
they're haters.
I mean, of course.
Use them for propaganda value when it looks good.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. All right, folks. See you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danarchy song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danarchy.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break for people.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks, fuck, reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
Almost says what?
Hell of a bank. Hell of a bank. Hell of a bank. Hell of a bank.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
You see Donald Trump out there? Doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keeping it 100.
Can't knock the hustle.
Come on.
Fuck them. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday.
My birthday.
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on. Price of blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.
Oh, that's terrible, Bloomberg.